I mean, relative to this industry, I think you're going to see predictive analytics on a whole new level based off the data that's coming from AI. I mean, I think the holy grail here is being able to really get predictive in injury and diseases, right? When you get enough data. I think you're also going to be looking at a very different ratio of patients to PT. Now that can be like, oh no, I can't see more patients. My workload is already full. But I mean, I think it's the way that we are delivering care is going to expand.
All right, excited. Excited to welcome someone to the show and to healthcare who's also like me. And I hope he's not offended by this. I'm going to call him a weirdo. It's because we don't fit until we do. That's the funny part of weirdos. It's like looking forward or one direction. It's like, well, that person doesn't fit. And then look backwards. You're like, oh, those dots connect. So Ryan is joining us on this of the show. Ryan is the founder and CEO of Include Health. He's helping to craft the future. Again, looking forward, it might not make sense, but I'm telling you backwards. Ah, that hindsight gets 2020. He's got a cool, you got a cool, innovative, different backgrounds. Before we get to that, we're recording this in the middle of the afternoon. You're at work, but if you were having a beer, if we were drinking, what would you, what's your drink of choice? We have to ask that. We get the hard questions out of the way first.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm committed to this podcast, so I actually do have a beer here.
You do, right? Have a beer. See, I just assumed. All right. Yeah, so what are you drinking?
I go all in. So this is Rheingeist Truth. This is a beer IPA in Cincinnati. My drink of choice is bourbon, but I'm not going to go that far at 2 o'clock, right?
2 o'clock in the afternoon. I stayed away from bourbon for the longest time until someone – it was actually a bartender who said, what do you want to drink? And I said, I don't know. I'll just have a beer. You know, I sort of had decision fatigue, and she leaned over the bar and she said, I make the best old fashioned you've ever had. And I was like, I think I've had two. So that's pretty low. And then I had one, and then I went back and I was like, you're right. That was great. And then I said, what else can we do? And that's when she started just doing bourbon on the rocks. And I was like, this isn't bad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And if it's a really good one, it's you can really, I mean, it really is good.
Yeah, I mean, I've gone down that path of like the old fashions, the ice spheres, and then I would get like the stainless steel ice cubes so you don't dilute it. And then I was like, all right, now I just want it neat. And then now I've got like the smoker to, well, I sit there, get cherry blood, and you smoke it, and it drops in and all. So yeah, it's slippery slope.
You start to sort of appreciate the little itty bitty things, right? Because I think when I was in college many moons ago, it was like whatever's cheapest and like vodka and Gatorade or whatever. I need enough stuff to drown out this whatever. And then you start getting the better stuff or the different stuff and you start to notice the nuance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you appreciate the craft behind it.
Yeah. All right. So the first round brought to you by Owens Recovery Science, a single source for PTs looking for certification in personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training, BFR, as the cool kids are saying it. Check out their podcast and their website to get certified to bring it into your practice at OwensRecoveryScience.com. So you are someone I'm taking, you don't like to brag. Not many people like to brag, but I'm asking so you get to just answer, even if it feels like a brag. Your non-traditional path to healthcare or what you do now, we'll get to that, but came from winning a bunch of awards while designing stuff for companies that like I've heard of and I use and purchase and stuff like that. So talk about your, I called it weird in the intro, but it is It's non-traditional. It doesn't make any sense. I'm using air quotes until it makes perfect sense. But before you did what you do now, you were designing cool stuff. Like talk about that for a second.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I am not a PT by trade, right? And I'm not a clinician. I'm a designer. I'm a product designer. So technical terms, industrial design. But, my training was designing physical products. So after school, I went to UC in Cincinnati. After school, I designed golf clubs for Nike and TaylorMade, and then medical equipment for Ethicon and Stryker. And there's some clubs out there that there's called the MOAD, the mother of all drivers, highly illegal from a regulatory perspective from clubs. It's like a transformer, but doing a lot of fun stuff like that. And then it was actually my senior thesis in design school what got me into Include in healthcare.
So I want to talk about other stuff that you design. Like how does designing a golf club head and then stuff for Stryker, like the cool part is I think someone like me goes, those things are totally, those are diametrically opposed. But from a designer perspective, you probably start with like a process or at least a thought process? Like, how are those things similar where I might not see it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of design. And the term's overused, like design thinking. A lot of people like to brand that and use that, right? But I mean, it's true. It's like as a designer, you are trained to hop into somewhere and take a complex problem, dissect it, identify the connection points and where points need to be connected, and then create a tangible solution that hopefully at the end of the day is simple, it's intuitive, right? And it solves that problem. So you apply that to anything, any industry, any product, doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's the cool. And I love similarities and differences, because where we see no similarities, if you look, long enough, if you really look at something, you can see where we're a lot of times more similar than different. Okay. I just talked to an organization, I won't say who yet, because I'm going to start working with them in 2024. And we went through a communications evaluation, which is fancy talk for like someone, you know, a similar process that you're talking about. And I begin this a lot of times by saying, because a lot of times I'm working with people in healthcare, a lot of times PTs, OTs, SLPs, and I'll say, what I'm about to do is going to sound a lot like a patient evaluation, because that's what we're doing. We're trying to figure out where you are, where you want to go. Well, why haven't you gotten there without me? Oh, let's talk about those barriers or the limitations or the whatever, the limiting factors. And then, okay, how do we solve around those things? Like I help some companies like launch podcasts and like, I don't have time in my week to do this. I go, great. So let's do it once a month. Why don't you block off 3 hours a month and we'll work and we'll batch record. And all of a sudden you watch people's shoulders drop like, oh yeah, that would solve my problem. Right. I'm like, great, and still give you the outcome that you wanted to do. Yep. So hold on a second. Did you get to keep, I'm sure you got to keep like this, like some of the stuff, right?
Yeah. A lot of times they'll send you like, you know, the free versions of it, like when it comes out, right? And like, or you get like massive discounts. Like it's funny because like we ended up for golf clubs designing so many golf clubs. Like you didn't even want another golf club. You're like, I don't know what to do with all these, right? And what's funny too is like I could talk about the science behind golf clubs all you want and the math, right? Like that all depends on having a consistent swing. And if you don't have a consistent swing, none of that matters. And so I don't. So like I don't have a whole lot of use for them, sadly.
Right. This club is neither good nor bad. Why don't we spend more time on the golf? And as somebody who is a cyclist, I try to be anyway. Yeah. A lot of times it's funny to watch cyclists, and I can say this because I am one. We'll try to save like ounces or grams on things. And meanwhile, it's like, well, you could just ride more and be a better. No, I want to spend a little more, look better and look faster.
I've always tried to stay away from that industry simply because there's so many toys and gadgets that I wouldn't stop. Like it just, I couldn't help myself.
The tech is crazy. All right. So you have that design background, that design thinking. Now let's fast forward to the now. Like, how do you describe what Include Health is? What do you get to do there? And what is Include Health doing? And then we'll get into some of like the nuance and future thinking. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like we're trying to fuse design with technology to make care and physical therapy more accessible. Like that's it. You know, our history, like, we started with smart machines that we launched in 18. And so like a smart strength trainer that we put in clinics. And when we launched it, people liked the machine, but they liked the software more. And so the immediate response was like, can we get more machines hooked up to the software? It took me like 6.5 years to design, build, and manufacture that machine. And so I was like, I'm not doing machines ever again. And the funny part is we actually took the brains of our machine and made sensors that we could make other machines smart. And we launched it at CSM in February of 20 before COVID shut everything down. Wow. And so like that never even got off the ground. And we actually ended up shutting the whole machine side of the business down during COVID, because right before COVID, we ended up doing a partnership with Cincinnati Children's Hospital, as well as in collaboration with the Air Force and then ultimately Google, that got us into computer vision. So now what we do is we digitize physical therapy through computer vision to extend care beyond the clinic and deliver it in patients' homes.
Here's a question for you. Do you want to boost your clinic revenue by $290 per patient per quarter? Of course you do. That's rhetorical. Physiotech's remote therapeutic monitoring can help you do that. Enhance patient outcomes, ease provider workload, and turbocharge your earnings. Kickstart with RTM at physiotech.ca. That's physiotech.ca. And the thing you interact with the most at your clinic, if you're a therapist, like it or not, is your EMR. MW Therapy's all-in-one outpatient PT EMR gives you seamless integration of patient portals, marketing automations, and billing, all at one unbelievable value. Switching over is a breeze too. Kick the tires, take a test drive at MWTherapy.com. And where is your PT career going? It's not rhetorical, it's literal. Embark on extraordinary patient care adventures with Jackson Therapy Partners. Visit them at JacksonTherapy.com. This is perfect for physical therapists eager to make their mark, to do what you want to do, where you want to do it. Discover where your career can take you at JacksonTherapy.com. So when you're saying digitize, like what, talk to me like I'm someone who understands every single word you just said, but maybe not in that order. So how does that work?
I think it's easiest to kind of frame it up in comparison to a traditional home exercise program, HEP, right? So like, you know, historically you're having patients do exercises at home, you're giving them a printout and no one does anything. You have no way of tracking what they do outside of evaluating them the next time they come in, right? So instead of giving them a printout, you're giving them a digital plan. And that plan is powered by computer vision, meaning that it is going to guide people through their exercises. It's going to give them real-time feedback. It's going to, you know, capture their range of motion. It's going to even record the video of them doing it and analyze their performance and give that data back to the PT to review. Okay. So it's much more interactive, personalized. And because of that, it like you get a lot higher engagement. There's also a layer of accountability because it's, you know, it's tracking you, right? And then that all comes back. Now, our whole thing was like to make it truly accessible, like body tracking. We did not want to do sensors. We didn't want to have to have like 3D cameras or be limited to certain devices. So like we made it web-based. So the whole thing is basically a smart website. It runs on phones, laptops, tablets, does not matter. All you need is a front-facing camera and a browser. And this plan is just sent to you via text with a link. You just click it. That's it.
It's funny how many things you just mentioned that might seem silly, like tracking or making it simple, right? And then I'm wearing a piece of tech, not on purpose, but those three little rings, little rings on my Apple Watch. I look down, and if my yellow exercise ring is a little low, I'm like, yeah, you gotta get off. You know, come on, man, you gotta do that. But if it's complicated to track, because I used to wear the fancy Garmin. Right. Sure. And that's a little more complicated to use. And there's nothing against it. That's got a little more focus.
More advanced.
But this is good enough for, a couch junkie like me sometimes to just get motivated. But again, it's funny how you start with complex, like this $3,000 camera, which can measure this. And then you watch as people don't use it. Why? Because we're sort of big, dumb animals. And if it's fancy, we'll be gravitated toward it. But then over time, if it's not easy to use and simple, actionable. I remember being a PT student and feeling like I was teaching my professors something, because I'd be like, oh, check out this cool app. And they would just kind of sit there and nod and let me tell them. And they're like, how easy, how fast is that to use? And I was like, oh, 20 minutes. And they're like, you're going to use 20 out of a 30-minute session or 20 out of a 45 or just to set that thing up? And I was like, yeah. And then you get out there and you don't. If it's not simple and easy and actionable, I think was the word that came to mind when you started mentioning you need a browser and a front-facing camera, and it does the thing. So what things is it measuring? Like, walk me through. Now let's get a little more zoomed.
Yeah, sure. So like, the experience will say, okay, here are the exercises we're going to do, right? And then the first thing it does is like, let's move back so we can see you, right? You just kind of set your device on a desk, phone, or on a floor, wherever. And then it will take you step by step. I mean, down to like, okay, sit and face right. And it'll confirm you're sitting and facing right. Okay, now put your feet on the floor, and then it'll give you the instructions of the exercises. Like, all right, now I got 10 reps for you to do. You know, do a knee extension. Okay, so you're extending your knee. It's counting down your reps. It won't count the rep if you don't hit the minimum range of motion target. So, like, if you're trying to cheat it and like kind of like, you know, it's not going to fly, right? All the while, we're logging the range of motion. We're recording the video. You know, at the end of it, they always, of course, fill out any kind of pain or what they may have as well. And so what comes back instantaneously is this full report that lays out all the exercises, PROs, functional tests, all the data, all the videos. You know exactly what they did within the minute after them doing it. And so that can be used to, augment in-person PT. It can be used, and sometimes if they stratify, to replace in-person PT. But it's really, at the end of the day, extending essentially the clinician's eyes into the homes.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Like, should are clinicians out there holding their breath right now? But in the beginning, in the end, it's It's people. We talk about that all the time. That's the theme that always emerges. In the beginning and end, it's always people to people.
Always. Always. So like the naturally anyone fears new technology because they worry about self-preservation.
Sure.
Right?
Guilty.
Who isn't, right? You're like, okay, like AI's out there. What is this doing from design? What is this doing from care? Like everyone, if you fear the unknown, that's human nature. It's also, I mean, adapt or die, right? Sure. Is real. Yeah. And so like you can fear it. I would then encourage understand it and then use it. And, you know, I've got good buddy that always says, you know, the technology is never going to replace a clinician, but a clinician that uses technology will.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
And I usually like to reinforce, it doesn't mean you need to jump wholeheartedly into something and completely immerse yourself and change course, but poking and reading and understanding, and again, finding where these things are augmenting or more similar than different, like, oh, I see what this could do. Yeah. And then realizing it's probably going to change again anyway, but getting the basics. I mean, that's another thing that shows up on this show a lot too, which is the basics. The simple is the complex. That's what it's made of.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I think everyone will agree that patients benefit from more access to physical therapy. And we all know that, like, even if you have the most compliant patient, you're with them, what, 1% of the month?
Right.
Right. So it's what they do outside of there that really moves the needle based off of your guidance. And if you can find ways to get them moving, get them more engaged in their care through technology, why would you not want to do that?
Why would you not want to do it? All right. So you used the term a second ago that, again, I know what both of those words are, but together, maybe not. And that's computer vision. Well, what is that? How's that come into play? Like, make someone like me understand it.
Yeah, sure. So computer vision basically just uses the computer to analyze a video feed, right? And to detect elements in it. So you'll have ones that will like detect objects and be like, hey, look, that's a chair, right? Hey, that's a redhead. Gotcha, right? Then you'll have ones that like are estimating. I mean, think of a video as just a bunch of pictures, right? Mm-hmm. And it's estimating them in real time where your joints are based on the video feed. And so then when that gets accurate enough, you're able to measure in real time the angles of these joints. You then get advanced to where it's not just like, okay, hey, I'm moving my elbow, right? And you're measuring this. You start to deploy machine learning, which is another layer on top of computer vision, that it can start to estimate things that a normal camera wouldn't even be able to naturally detect. So without getting into the weeds here, like a 2D camera has no idea about distance. Doesn't know how far back away I am, right? Because every camera has different focal lengths and all this kind of stuff. But when you combine computer vision technologies, then with machine learning, you could say, I know the width of that chair. I can estimate now how far away you are. And like, we'll do stuff. We do stuff with the Air Force where we're pulling accurate velocity, force, and power metrics, which all require very accurate distance just on any camera. From a website. So it is just analyzing a bunch of images and being able to provide data from those at the end of the day.
So being able to look at something as actionably having a computer look at something, that camera can see it, but vision's different than sight, right? I mean, that's sort of what I'm taking out of this is now it's actionable.
You got to interpret that. And it'll get machine learning will get to the point where, I mean, it can interpret things that even does not see. So you'll have occlusion of things like if my hand's in front of this and you can't see it, it'll still know where my eyes are, even though I can't see my eyes, right? Because it can estimate it based on everything else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So you mentioned a few things, one of them that you're doing with Air Force, but where do you see it? Where is this now? Where are we not yet, but soon will be in terms of healthcare? Let's stay in the area that we are.
So like, you know, we started developing this in 20 and kind of field testing it in 21, just proving the technology could do what we needed it to do. Of course, any technology in healthcare needs a use case. You need a reimbursement model for it to fly, right? So, you know, when RTM, remote therapy monitoring, came out, we were already essentially doing it. We were like, okay, well, let's just flip the billing switch on now, right? So we've been doing that over the last 2 years. And working with health systems, ortho practices, PT networks, right? Just enabling basically hybrid care and being able to augment your in-person visits, right? And generate some ancillary revenue. What's been interesting, though, is that We've also got pulled into treating patients directly in value-based care models. Okay. And so like we originally built the technology for other clinicians to use, right?
Right.
We then got approached saying, hey, we're having some challenges with some of our partners being able to operationalize virtual care. Is there any way we can hire and include health to treat these patients directly? So we've been doing that since the summer now. And so we're in value-based models where, you know, these patients have to properly medically stratify. Obviously, virtual only care is not going to be for everybody, right? Right. But for those that stratify to it, we're treating them directly using our technology. And I think that's really the future, is this blend of on-site and remote care.
Yeah. Yeah. With remote therapeutic monitoring, and we just started talking about that on this show several times. And whenever we do, we see a big spike in downloads, which tells me people are curious, right? People are like, I do not understand this, but I understand enough that I should understand this a little better.
Yeah.
And the use of remote therapeutic monitoring says that you can act as the therapist, but you don't have to physically be there. But there needs to be a way to track that.
Correct.
And also as a person, you're like, one more thing to have to log on or email, whatever. Can I make that part simple? So again, I can get back to doing the thing I'm good at and like to do. And when we hear and make it easy, yeah. When I hear those things, like that's when people get excited. And I think that's where this is the intersection of all the things we're talking about is.
It is. It's interesting because people are interested in it. Statistically, people are not operationalizing it at any meaningful scale yet. Right. Like, you know,
why do you think that where are the roadblocks for that? It's just not, sure. It's not smooth enough.
I mean, it is treating patients virtually and treating patients in the clinic are very different workflows.
Sure.
And we know the industry's got a lot of workforce challenges and people are burned out. Right. And dropping a secondary workflow on a burned out workforce does not go very well.
Right.
Right. So when you're burned out, you do not want to change. You're trying to make your life simpler. You're not trying to add more complications to it. So, you know, you get those that are all about it and those that are like, I cannot do another thing. Now, like RTM also ride or dies on engagement. You basically have to have that patient engaged every other day. And the incumbent platforms historically have not had a very good success rate of keeping that engagement, right?
Easy, so, engaging, novel.
Right, right. So, I mean, it's just really challenging to operate both models. And I think that's actually one of the reasons why we got approached was it's like, hey, these groups are really struggling to do this. Is there any way you can do this?
In a vacuum, this stuff's easy, right? You just
sure.
Give a plan and have someone do it. And then once or twice it works and then life happens.
Sure. I mean, there's a published study that shows like, the average timeline for a change in healthcare is 17 years.
Yeah, that number pops up a lot. Like, and right, I'm doing a presentation at CSM talking to the researcher where I say, like, you got published. I have news. Your goal mm-hmm. wasn't to get published. That was a sub goal. Your goal was mm-hmm. to make an impact or study sure. something or research sure. something that was applicable, right? Because we want to move the needle of the common, you know. And why does it take so long from published to beds, a bench to bedside? And I'm like, well, I, from my lens, and again, I look at things that I understand, is sure. If you share a link in an abstract, that's good. But Tom Cruise is the most bankable actor in Hollywood is the example I use. But he does press. He does phoners and he jumps on Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmel. And he does a movie trailer and they do that. And that's for a movie that you're pretty sure is going to be great. And yep. I'm like, you need to do that. If you want the audience to react, I was taught this in radio. If you want the audience to feel a 10, you got to give a 20.
Yep.
Like you got to give the 20.
And so, consistently.
And consistently.
Right. Right. Like, I mean, technically Include started as my senior thesis in design school in 2006.
Wow. So what? You're an overnight success.
Right.
It just has hundreds and hundreds of overnights.
Right. There you go. Yeah, exactly. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I understand computer vision. We see where RTM is going to make it smoother for both parties. And that's usually when things start to get interesting or start to get adopted, is when they start to get used, when they're friction, I won't say friction less, but they're a little bit smoother. They'll work a little bit better. Outside of fear, because we're humans, what are some other reasons people haven't completely leaned in on this, or they're saying I'm still good? Because there are the early adopters, and then there are like the laggards and that whole paradigm.
Outside of fear, I mean, humans I think are wired to just not like change at all. Right? Like, I mean, people like be comfortable, and change does not create comfort. So there's going to be like a natural resistance there. And then there's also just a practical one. Like, you have to have a model to be able to support it, which is what RTM provides. But then there's a practicality behind that model where you're like, okay, not every payer supports RTM. So now I got to bifurcate, like, okay, I can do it with you. I can't do it with you. Right. And then you're like, okay, now I'm already been using one platform for like HEP. Can I do RTM there and then or not? Right. And then, okay, if now I'm going to use another one there, now I got these two platforms, and it goes back into like the burnout and all. Right.
Do they talk to each other? Right.
And I mean, this is the reason why healthcare change takes that long. It's like, you have to first, if that model never comes in, if RTM never comes in, there is no incentive for the industry to do this ever. Right. Mm-hmm. So, okay, now you have an incentive, but now there's a whole layer of operational complexities that need to be solved. And that takes time. And RTM's a baby. It's only 2 years old. Right.
Right. We want to talk about, again, that bench to bedside in 17 years. That's going to be one of my first things that I say. So I'm teaching that course, or I'm giving that talk at CSM with a researcher. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, so I want her to, she's going to go first, and she's going to explain, like, this is how research works. You work somewhere, your goal is I need to publish something, and I find a problem. I structure an experiment, I run it. And then eventually someone finds my research or my findings valuable enough to publish.
Sure.
And then when she's done, like, I almost want to treat it like Schoolhouse Rocks. Like, this is how a bill becomes a bill, right? I'm just a bill, only a bill. Mm-hmm. Then I'll say, awesome. So your finish line is published. And they'll say, yes. And then I start again. I go back to receive the kick, and I try to get to the end zone again. I go, great. Except the audience doesn't care. Yeah. Like, you telling me I did a thing, it's cool story, as the kids would say, cool story, bro. Tell it again. I need to understand how that helps me become a better me, do the easier thing for me, achieve a thing I have never achieved. Can you help me? So what I want the audience always here, but there to look at it from the other side of the lens is, what are the 10 different ways you need, not want, but you need to communicate this in? And if it's not there, if the incentive isn't there, and I'm gonna side with the researchers. They're not incentivized to do anything after publish, because their job is to go back to receive another kick and try to get to the end zone again. So I'll say, there's your first problem. You're not incentivized. You're also not taught how to do it. So you don't have tools, training, or time, or a reason. So that's you want the there secret. Of why takes a lot there. That's the four, right? Tools, training, time, and no reason to go past the end zone. But I feel like now the technology is catching up. I think I gave this example the other day. There was an Avengers movie in like 1980 something, and it was horrible. The story was the same. Like, the story could be the same, but like the CGI just wasn't there. It was like, dude, Thor's hammer is clearly on a rope. Like, okay. But like, now caught up. Now we can retell that story. Right. It feels like now where the tech has caught up to the problem and solving it well.
It has. Yeah. I mean, there's a practicality from technology of like, no one wants to be like shipping hardware, or only a certain portion of your patients can use it if they have the latest and greatest device. Right. Like, that's not going to fly. So like for us, like, you know, I kept thinking of like my parents trying to do computer vision, and I'm like, I can't have them download anything, because they don't even know. Every time they want their Apple ID and password, I get a phone call, right? Like, okay, no, not going to put people through that. And then I was like, I'm not going to, you know, some people are going to want it on a bigger screen because they, you know, eyesight, or like, you know, it's like some people want it on a laptop. So we went heavy into making it, I roll it all up into being as accessible as possible. Yeah. But I mean, to make that happen, we collaborated directly with Google for 2 years, helping train their models to be accurate enough for physical therapy.
Wow.
Like Google. Yeah. There's a Google's 2021 IO conference. They debuted this model, and they used us as a case study, and it's got videos of me like doing exercises in that back corner. Right. Same exact layout, everything. Right. And I probably have the same shirt on, because I wear the same thing every day. And like, but it took all that to be able to say, okay, like we can do this. Cause if you could put something out and it wasn't accurate, right? Like that's not going to go anywhere either. So
yeah, it's got to reach a floor. The ceiling, the sky's the limit, but it's got to reach a floor of like, this needs to be easy enough, valuable enough, accessible, I feel like is a good word.
Yeah. That's our anchor.
We're going to play a game called Three Questions. Are you ready to play Three Questions? Let's do Three Questions.
On the hot seat with Three Questions on the PT Pinecast.
All right, Three Questions brought to you by ATI, the leader in PT clinical research with their top-notch clinics. It's a perfect opportunity for career growth. Explore more at ATIPT.com. First question, if you could invent a new piece of technology with no limitations. So sometimes limitations are good, right? Because if you have nothing to bounce against, no box to think outside of, it gets hard. But I'm going to take the limitations off. What would you invent or what would you have fun creating if you could just create and no limitation, no money, whatever?
Well, I mean, I want to make the flux capacitor real and do time travel, right? I mean, that movie captivated me early on. I love it to this day.
They're doing it on Broadway. Did you know that? There's Back to the Future is now on Broadway. Yeah, it's currently. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm not a huge. I like theater, but like when someone was like Back to the Future on Broadway, I was like, coming in.
Soundtrack. Yeah, that soundtrack.
I know. Huey Lewis and the News. Yeah. All right. Second question on Three Question. All right, we'll go standard question, which is if you're stranded on a desert island, and you have only access to one piece of technology, what would you choose?
Well, it'd be a phone.
Has to be.
Right? Like, because that's a whole bunch of technology rolled into one.
I remember there was a great ad. I think it was Apple, but it had the picture of the iPhone, and then all around it was all the things it was replacing, like a Walkman, a TV. Sure. Like, it was like playing on that whole old school, new school. But I remember when you look at it like that, where it was a TV, a VCR, a web, like an early Apple computer. It was like, wow, this. And when someone complains, myself included, like, oh, these things are like $1,000 now. It's like, do you understand how often you use this and how many different things? Like, imagine we've done it. Leave it at home for a day. Good luck getting your life done. You can't do it.
I know. You know, but then you think of like, I'm on an island. Does it have cell signal? And then do I not have a charger? So that's only going to last me for about 24 hours. Right. Maybe I should have some fire starting technology instead.
you could Instacart that, though, is what we could say. You could order a boat. You could order Uber watercraft. Third question. If you could change one thing about how people, and you can pick the audience or audiences, you know, so patients or providers, if you could change the thing about how people perceive digital health, what would you want them to just change their thought process on? Or how would you want them to look at it differently?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to our earlier conversation, the shift away from the knee-jerk reaction of fear to thinking about how this can improve access, which again, I think is what everybody will all align on, that more access is better. So just thinking it through that lens.
Yeah, that's good. All right, you're off the hot seat. That's Three Questions again, brought to you by our friends from ATI. Hit them online at ATIPT.com. Looking towards the future, what challenges? I love, you know, that whole SWOT analysis thing, right? Challenges, but also opportunities, because where there's friction, where there's a challenge, if you solve that, that's sort of where innovation happens. What challenges and opportunities do you see in the continued decline of reimbursement? Because that's another thing people say, well, I'm getting reimbursed less. But I look at these things as tools, and tools is a little bit of effort and a lot of results. So what challenges, and I want to make sure you it's not just a negative question, it's what opportunities do you see there?
I mean, and usually a challenge is what reveals an opportunity, right? Because you're not motivated to find a solution to a problem you don't have, right? So we all know that's the problem. And I think, you know, technology will help us navigate that. That's going to come in a variety of different flavors. And you know, if we're talking about reimbursement declines, okay, can you do RTM to get ancillary revenue and make that as easy as possible to kind of augment some of that? Okay, can technology enable you to deliver care and self-pay models that are lower costs, right? And that, you know, don't have so much dependency on synchronous connections and all. And so, you know, PT's always been bound by two people setting up their time together, right? Whether that historically has been in the physical clinic, and it obviously still is, but then also even like a traditional telehealth, you're still bound by two people aligning schedules and coming together. Right. And so that puts a cap on how many people you can impact and see, puts a cap on how much revenue you can generate. So if you really start thinking of how technology can enable effective, efficient, asynchronous care, that's going to unlock new revenue opportunities.
Are we moving so fast with technology that, I mean, even students listen to this show and they're listening going, okay, I should at least pay attention to this and figure things out and watch the videos and listen to the podcasts and dabble and take demos and watch demos. Are we moving so fast that like this stuff is changing overnight? Like it's almost like an innovation burnout. And it's a speed of innovation burnout.
Yeah. Specifically around AI.
Yeah.
The speed of that is unbelievable. And if you're not tracking it now, get on it, because like it is every day it's fundamentally changing different pieces of this world, and it's in its infancy. And so if you're trying to even think like what's 2 years from now look like, yeah. I mean, what was AI 2 years ago versus what it is now? Like, so I mean, it's exponential. And I know that can be scary and overwhelming for people as well. But what's also nice about it is, I mean, you can go to YouTube and just start watching real simple videos that can get you up to speed very quickly.
Yeah. Do you know who Seth Godin is? He's a writer. Do you listen to any?
Yeah.
So Seth Godin, he's got an email. He writes an email every day. And it's one of the few that I actually get every day that I read every day. And he was talking about some of that today, where he said, listen, I understand how fast things change. And I know that you have access, but on the flip side, we have so much access. Yes. I mean, what don't we have access to with the thing that you would bring to a desert island that you can't access? So he said the it was really great. It was apropos that his email today came out and we were talking, because he really was saying it's not the access anymore. It really is who's going to burn the calories, the mental calories, to learn the thing, and who's going to put in the effort. And that person will be an overnight success. How did this person become so great at it? It's like they did the push. No push-ups, no muscles.
Right. No pain, no gain. That's how it works. Right.
Yeah. I'm looking at 1247. Was that today? Yeah. In an economy built on skill, knowledge, and attitude, the single most powerful way to improve your productivity is to learn something. You put in the effort once and it can pay off for decades. So if you're saying, you wait till next year to lean into this, and again, it doesn't mean you go 100% in, but you better be paying attention or at least learning the basic terms, or we'll be six iterations past you before you even get in the shallow end of the pool.
Yeah. And even in terms of access, I mean, like there's podcasts that'll come out there, just 10-minute blips of just like, here's the latest things to know about what's happened the past week, 2 weeks, whatever. Right. And there's a great AI newsletter called The Neuron, and like it's awesome. And it just kind of, here's the things you need to know, because every day there's more announcements and all that kind of stuff. And it just gives you enough to like, you have a pulse on it. Right. And then something will catch your eye that like crosses the stream of what you're currently doing. You're like, oh, wait, I might be able to apply that here.
Right. It is this weird, it is this term, and I say this a lot when I speak to students, which is, and I use my story as an example, but I want them to be able to apply what I tripped onto, which is forwards, a radio DJ becoming a PT doesn't make any sense. Like I was switching careers, was not bringing anything old from my radio career into PT until I got there. And then I was like, hey, look at this. There's a bunch of people who are super smart. And I'm like, why does it take so long to like learn stuff? And why don't you do it kind of, why do you default to boring? Like you could be fun and insightful. Like there's no rule. And then I launched a podcast, and then looking backwards, I was like, oh, well, a podcast wasn't a thing I knew when I was in communication school. It wasn't a thing that when I was in radio. It was only after I left that it sort of became a thing. And then it was, oh, this is similar enough that I could figure it out. And I try to put that in front of students. They go, I don't know what your other dot is, because all dots, two dots, there's a straight line between any 2 points, not a lot, but any 2 points. I don't know what your other dot is, but if healthcare or physical therapy is one of them, we need the people who design golf clubs to now look at healthcare, because we can't look at it like you. You've got a unique life experience, whatever you want to call it, lived experience, that it's simple to you. It's very clear, but I could never see it that way. And I hope people embrace that.
Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of collaboration. Right. And, you know, you take a complex problem. You can't solve a complex problem in a vacuum. So you got to look at it from multiple lenses, get multiple perspectives and disciplines together to be able to solve that. And
somebody said it in a great quote. I love like quotable quotes, but it's like, you can't get yourself out of a situation by using the using the type of thinking that got you into that situation.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm saying like, you need to think, it's what, you know, the Apple campaign was, think differently, right? I know it's grammatically incorrect, but like, think differently. Like that's literally what we're asking you to do. I'm going to force you to make a bold prediction. What is next year? What is next January? I feel like AI, machine learning, computer vision are words we're using now. What are words that we didn't even talk about in this podcast that are just being whispered now that are going to be screamed in January of 2025, which sounds like a fake number.
Oh, yeah, right. I mean, relative to this industry, I think you're going to see predictive analytics on a whole new level based off the data that's coming from AI. I mean, I think the holy grail here is being able to really get predictive in injury and diseases, right? When you get enough data, but you got to get enough data to do that. I think you're also going to be looking at a very different ratio of patients to PT. And I think... like now that can be like, oh no, I can't see more patients. My workload is already full. But I mean, I think it's the way that we are delivering care is going to expand. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways to treat patients. And you're going to have models out there where you're going to have PTs that are going to be able to like be seeing hundreds of patients a month. Right. Yeah. Like, and again, it all comes down to access. Right.
Correct. I ask a question when I do my podcast live at PT programs. And before I start, I poll the audience, right? Like how many people have never heard of the show and how many people have, right? And I'm excited when the audience says they haven't heard of me, because I'm like, great opportunity to win one person over and say, this person is going to help me, whatever. And one of the questions I ask, and I say, I'm going to ask a question. I don't want you to answer it out loud. I want you to answer it in your head. Then I want you to watch what I do with the guests. Then I want you to ask the question again and see if your answer changed. And the question is Jimmy a real physical therapist? Because I don't treat patients. I'm not an education and I'm not a researcher. But, and then I'll end with, can you touch a patient without ever touching a patient? And when I first started asking that question, people were like, that's weird. And now it's not even a leap, because there are people who were like, I just interviewed a woman who's like, I do tennis elbow remotely. That's it. That's my niche. I'm good at it. I don't need to see people. And that wasn't even remotely possible 3 years ago. And now it is not only possible, it is done.
Yeah. And effective. Right. And so effective. I mean, it's for so long, PTs were always trained like this is their tool. Right. And it's like, this is your tool and the knowledge you have. And you can extend that knowledge in a lot of different ways beyond just putting your hands on someone.
Yeah. And it's not a less than. And I think that's emotion and ego, myself included, which is, well, if I'm doing it differently, am I really? I ask myself all this time, am I really a PT? But I work in this weird communication amplification thing where, but I like doing it and I can see and people benefit from it. So that's the thing I need to, right. That's but isn't that the grail. Definition? Right. That is the holy grail. But the funny thing is we're big dumb animals. And sometimes this emotion and this ego or super ego or I can't remember which one it is, comes into play where you're like, but no, I need to do it this way because I need them, the proverbial they, to look at me like I want to be felt. But in the end, you got to go to bed at night and lay there. You got to get out of bed in the morning. If you don't like it, that's a hard setup to do, my friends.
That is. And that will wear you down. And that has a lot of downstream complications as well, right? So,
Where should people go if they're like, fine, I'm nodding. Where do you want people to go to find out about Include Health? Where should they go?
Yeah, I mean, our site, includehealth.com. I'm very active involved on LinkedIn as well. If you want to ping me directly, give me a shout. I'm always open to be talking technology, PT, access.
You mentioned the AI email list, the newsletter, the Neuron, right?
Yep.
What other things are out there that are like on your, I open this every day or I go to this, this is a good resource? Because again, this is like, this isn't even a can of worms. This is cans upon cans upon cans of worms. What are one or two things that you're like, these people, they break it down well, this is good information. Where like on AI, computer vision, any of these things that we talk about?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, like from a newsletter standpoint, I mean, the Neuron's really the main one I subscribe to. What I found really helpful is like, even if you don't connect with people like on LinkedIn, if you just follow people, there's so much content that you can just be able to just keep up to speed with things. And And it does, the algorithm does a good job of feeding you things that like you interact with and all, right? Right. And like, so I mean, a lot of times I'll just go on there and like find these conversations that people are having. And I follow people in computer vision, like bring up stuff that just blows my mind of what's going on out there. It's not even on my radar, right? Yeah. But that's been the easiest way.
Yeah, it's a good use of sort of hashtags. It's like, I know nothing about this. Use it, follow four or five people who look like they're regularly, we talked about frequency, regularly sharing good information, right. And then sort of jump on that train and gain from them.
Yeah.
All right. Last thing we do on the show is called The Parting Shot.
This is The Parting Shot.
All right, Parting Shot brought to you by the Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy. Find them online at orthopt.org. Their industry profession leading current concepts of orthopedic physical therapy will take you from where you are to where you want to go. Maybe you want to take that OCS exam. This will get you to the starting line feeling confident and competent. So check out current concepts at orthopt.org. What do you want to leave with the audience? What's your mic drop moment, your soapbox statement, your something looking forward? What do you got, Ryan?
Technology is your friend, and adapt or die at the end of the day.
I mean, you're not even being, you know, dramatic, which is, that was the whole thing. Darwin didn't say the strongest, that people misquote Darwin all the time. He said the most adaptable to change. We wouldn't be here. Neanderthal was way bigger, way stronger.
Right.
We knew fire and maybe how to make an arrow, bow and arrow, something like that. So that's why we're still here.
Yeah. I mean, everyone adapts. Like, even if you don't like it, like everyone has evolved, right? We like, right. And so like, just embrace evolution and like, know that these tools can actually make you like a super PT, right? But if you approach it as like, shut off, nope. The way I've done things the last 20 years is the only way things are done. And that's it. It's like the rest of it's going to pass you by.
Yeah. And it's going to be ounce of prevention, pound of cure in terms of trying to catch up. You're going to expend so much energy to try to catch up where a little bit of expenditure can sort of keep you on the pulse.
Well said.
Thanks for doing what you do, because we can see it'll help more people. And I think it will also be reducing burnout for the people who are trying to do the good thing and fight the good fight.
Yeah.
Appreciate your time. I say the best conversations happen at happy hour. Thanks for coming to ours.
Appreciate it.